Transformation of America by Mark Phillips and Kathy O'Brien. Chapter 1, My Introduction to Humanity. My pedophile father, Earl O'Brien, brags that he began substituting his penis for my mother's nipple soon after I was born. My multi-generational incest-abused mother, Carol Tannis, did not protest his perverse actions due to, reportedly, having similar abuse as a child, which caused her to acquire multiple personality disorder. One, my earliest recovered memory was that I could not breathe with my father's penis jammed into my little throat. Yet I could not discern his semen from my mother's milk. I do not recall thinking, but I am aware through education that this early sexual abuse distorted my primitive concepts of feeding, breathing, sexuality, and parental perceptions. I recall as a toddler being unable to run, I could barely walk, to my mother for help as my instincts demanded. Through my gulping sobs, my terror rose as I tried to clear my throat of my father's semen and draw a breath of air. My mother finally arrived at my side. Rather than comfort me, she accused me of throwing a temper tantrum and holding my breath. She responded only by throwing a glass of cold water in my face. I was shocked. As the water splashed my face, I knew she would not help and it was up to me to save myself. I automatically multiple personality disordered. I was, of course, too young to logically understand that what my father was doing to me was wrong. I accepted his strangling sexual abuse as a normal and natural part of my home life, and split off a personality to deal with the pain and suffocation to satisfy his perversions. Therefore, as a child, I was dissociative of my father's abuse. I was totally unable to recall his sexual abuse, even in his presence, until I saw and felt his penis. Then the terror, which was my conditioned response, triggered access to that part of my brain that previously endured the trauma. I was remembering the abuse and how to deal with it. This part of my brain developed into a personality of its own which belonged to my father, which he rented out and later sold to the US government, as will be explained and detailed in the following pages. Other parts of my conditioned mind dealt with other abusers, abuses and circumstances. My father was, as revealed by my own investigations, apparently a multi-generational incest child from a large, poor, and horribly dysfunctional family. His mother earned a living as a prostitute for local lumbermen after his father died when he was 2 years old. My father's brothers and sister were all sexually and occult, ritually abused just as he was. They grew up to be drug addicts, prostitutes, street derelicts, and pedophiles who also sexually abused me and my brothers and sisters. I developed more personality splits to deal with the traumas of these torturous relationships. My mother's dysfunctional family also appears to be multi-generational, but of a slightly higher socio-economic class. Her father owned the building occupied by a Masonic Blue Lodge he led, and managed a local beer distribution business with her mother after completing his military career. Together they sexually abused my mother and her three brothers, who in turn sexually abused me. My family often went camping on the vast wilderness acreage surrounding my grandfather's Masonic Lodge in Newego, Michigan. Large bluffs referred to as the High Banks overlooked the White River flowing through his property, which is where we pitched our tents. My mother's brothers, Uncle Ted and Uncle Arthur Bomber Tannis, often accompanied us and sexually abused my brother and me. It was deer hunting season in or around November 1961, when my father took the family camping on the High Banks to hunt with my uncles. That night, as my brother and I were being sexually passed around the campfire to satisfy pedophile perversions, a lost hunter stumbled into our camp. My father shot him when he attempted to run, the rifle's blasts piercing my brain and further fragmenting my mind. I sat dazed in a dissociative trance while my mother methodically picked up the campsite and my father and uncles disposed of the body. As my father drove us away from the crime scene, we were stopped by several hunters who had the road blocked in a desperate attempt to locate their missing companion. They described the man I saw my father kill, and said they heard gunshots. Reality intruded on my dissociative trance, and I screamed and cried hysterically until I no longer knew why I was crying. My Uncle Ted too soon became a street derelict. Uncle Bomber died a few years later from alcoholism in his early 40s. And my father became more financially and politically connected. My mother's oldest brother, Uncle Bob, was a pilot in Air Force Intelligence and often boasted that he worked for the Vatican. Uncle Bob was also a commercial pornographer, producing kiddie porn for the local Michigan Mafia, which looped back to Mafia Porn King and U.S. Representative Jerry Ford. I split off more personalities just to deal with my Uncle Bob, his friends, and the perverse business he shared with my father. My father's sixth grade education had earned him a job as a worm digger for local sport fishermen. By the time I was 6 years old, however, his pornographic exploitation of my older brother, Bill, and me had provided enough income to move us into a bigger house nestled in the Michigan sand dunes. My father was right at home there. The tourists and drug dealers who littered the eastern shore of Lake Michigan further supplemented his income by paying for perverse sex with us children. My father also became involved in illicit drug sales. Soon after we moved, my father was reportedly caught sending kiddie porn through the U.S. mail. It was a bestiality film of me with my Uncle Sam O'Brien's boxer dog, Buster. My Uncle Bob, also implicated in manufacturing the porn, out of apparent desperation informed my father of a U.S. Government Defense Intelligence Agency top secret project to which he was privy. This was Project Monarch. Project Monarch was a mind control operation which was recruiting multi-generational incest abused children with multiple personality disorder for its genetic mind control studies. I was a prime candidate, a chosen one. My father seized the opportunity as it would provide him immunity from prosecution. In the midst of the pandemonium that ensued, Jerry Ford arrived at our house with the evidence in hand for a meeting with my father. "Is Earl home?" he called to my mother, who nervously stood behind the screen door, hesitating to let him in. "Not yet," my mother replied, her voice shaking. "He should have been home from work by now. I know he's expecting you." "That's okay." Ford turned his attention to me. I was standing outside on the front porch, and he crouched down to my level. Patting the large, brown envelope containing the confiscated porn tucked under his arm, he said, "You like doggies, huh?" "Buster is a nice doggie," I replied. "He's funny." Not understanding why the dog had been whisked away when the porn was confiscated, I complained, "Buster's gone." "Buster's gone?" Ford asked. "Yeah? My Uncle Sam took him away," I told him. Ford laughed loudly at the irony of my statement. In my limited view, I thought he found it humorous that Buster was gone. My father pulled into the driveway, honking the horn of his new Dan convertible. Ford stood up. With his fly eye level to me, I noticed his penis was erect and reached for it as conditioned. "Not now, honey," he said. "I have business to tend." Ford went inside with my parents to officially seal my fate. Not long after that, my father was flown to Boston for a two-week course at Harvard on how to raise me for this offshoot of MKUltra Project Monarch. When he returned from Boston, my father was smiling and pleased with his new knowledge of what he termed reverse psychology. This equates to satanic reversals, and involves such play on words as puns and phrases that stuck in my mind like, "You earn your keep, and I'll keep what you earn." He presented me with a commemorative charm bracelet of dogs, and my mother with the news that they would be having more children to raise in the project. I now have two sisters and four brothers ranging from age 16 to 37 who are still under mind control. My mother complied with my father's suggestions, mastering the art of language manipulation. For example, when I could not snap my own pajama top to the bottoms in a childish effort to keep my father out of them, I asked my mother, "Please snap me." She did. She would snap her forefingers against my skin in a stinging manner. The pain I felt was psychological, as this proved to me once again that she had no intention of protecting me from my father's sexual abuse. Also, in keeping with his government-provided instructions, my father began working me like the legendary Cinderella. I shoveled fireplace ashes, hauled stacked firewood, raked leaves, shoveled snow, chopped ice, and swept, because, my father said, "Your little hands fit so nicely around the rake, mop, shovel, and broom handles." By this time, my father's sexual exploitation of me included prostitution to his friends, local mobsters and masons, relatives, Satanists, strangers, and police officers. When I wasn't being worked to physical exhaustion, filmed pornographically, prostituted, or engaged in incest abuse, I dissociated into books. I had learned to read at the young age of 4 due to my photographic memory, which was a natural result of MPD/DID. Government researchers involved in MKUltra Project Monarch knew about the photographic memory aspect of MPD/DID, of course, as well as other resultant, superhuman, characteristics. Visual acuity of an MPD/DID is 44 times greater than that of the average person. My developed unusually high pain threshold, plus compartmentalization of memory, were necessary for military and covert operations applications. Additionally, my sexuality was primitively twisted from infancy. This programming was appealing and useful to perverse politicians who believed they could hide their actions deep within my memory compartments, which clinicians refer to as personalities. Immediately after my father's return from Boston, I was routinely prostituted to then Michigan State Senator Guy Vanderjagt. Vanderjagt later became a U.S. Congressman and eventually chairman of the Republican National Congressional Committee that put George Bush in the office of president. I was prostituted to Vanderjagt after numerous local parades which he always participated in, at the Mackinac Island Political Retreat, and in my home state of Michigan, among other places. My Uncle Bob helped my father decorate my bedroom in red, white, and blue paneling and American flags. He provided assistance in scrambling my mind according to Project Monarch methodologies. Fairy tale themes were used to confuse fantasy with reality, particularly Disney stories and The Wizard of Oz, which provided the base for future programming. I had personalities for pornography, a personality for bestiality, a personality for incest, a personality for withstanding the horrendous psychological abuse of my mother, a personality for prostitution, and the rest of me functioned somewhat normally at school. My normal personality provided a cover for the abuse I was enduring, but best of all, it had hope. Hope that there was somewhere in the world where people did not hurt each other. This same personality also attended catechism, a weekly class at our Catholic church, St. Francis de Sales in Muskegon, Michigan. My catechism teacher was a nun, or sister. Although I could not consciously think to protect myself from abuse, I had decided that becoming a nun would provide me with the kind of life I sought. I could not rely upon my family, the police, or politicians to protect me. The church appeared to be my answer, and I listened diligently in class and prayed religiously. I learned all about the political structure of the church, and was prepared for my first confession. The Catholic beliefs I was taught include the idea that man is not fit to talk to God, the Father, directly, but must have a priest intercede instead. This is the purpose of going to confession. I was instructed to tell my sins to the priest, also referred to as Father, who would relay the message to God. He would then supposedly tell me how many Hail Marys and Our Father prayers to say as my penance or punishment. My catechism teacher gave the class several examples of sins, which included sex outside of marriage. When the priest, Father James Thallon, slid open the little screen partition in the closet-sized confessional, I began as I had been instructed, "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned." I then proceeded to tell him that I had sex with my father and brother, to which he responded that I should say 3 Hail Marys and 1 Our Father and I would be forgiven. I knew then that I had to either believe that this confession thing was a hoax, or that God condoned sexual child abuse. That night, my father had a talk with me. Apparently he was the father that the priest had interceded to. My father instructed me that, from now on, I was to simply say, "I disobeyed my parents," when I went to confession and nothing more. The next time I went to confession, I did exactly as I was told. The veiled screen came off the confessional partition between me and the priest, and a penis was stuck through the window. "God said that your penance is to treat me as you would your father. And remember, whatsoever you do to the least of your brothers, that you do unto me." After performing oral sex on Father Thallon, I emerged from the confessional where all the other kids were waiting very impatiently for their turn. My teacher scolded me for taking so long and told me to add a few extra "Our Fathers" to my penance. When I told her I already did my penance, she told me again the order of things to the confessional ritual, which did not fit anything I had just experienced. Without ever consciously knowing why, I abandoned the idea of becoming a nun, as that part of me, too, split off from what was left of my normal base personality. I continued to maintain an illusion of normalcy for school, 5 excelling in my studies due to my photographic memory and in spite of my chronic daydreaming. I had plenty of friends and played enthusiastically at recess, expending large amounts of energy in my subconscious effort to escape my own mind. And I lost myself in the books my father suggested I read: The Wizard of Ounce, Alice in Wonderland, Island of the Blue Dolphins, Disney classics, and Cinderella, all of which were used in conditioning my mind for what soon would become mind control programming. My television viewing was restricted and monitored in keeping with my father's gained knowledge. I was, however, permitted to watch the best of movies: The Wizard of Ounce, Disney classics, Alice in Wonderland, and Cinderella, over and over and over again. When I was in second grade, my brownie troop marched in the Memorial Day parade, in which then Michigan State Senator Vander Jote also participated. At the end of the parade, he took me into a nearby motel and had me perform oral sex on him before sending me back to where my brownie troop was waiting. My brownie leader and peers thought it commendable that Vander Jag took me with him. They gathered around to hear all about it. I noticed a white splash of semen on my sash, and hurriedly explained that he had taken me for a milkshake, as I wiped it away. Having to cover for his perversion to my brownie troop infringed on my school personality, and the normal remainder became even smaller. With the memory of this incident compartmentalized in my mind, I made so conscious association to Vander Jagt when my third grade teacher announced that we were taking a field trip to the state capitol in Lansing, Michigan, where he was in session. Once at the capitol, I was ushered away from my classmates and taken to an office where he was waiting with his friend and mentor, soon to be president, Gerald Ford. Vander Jagt lifted my skirt, pulled down my panties, and placed me on his desk for sex with him and Ford. Afterward they laughed as Vander Jagt placed a small American flag in my rectum and instructed me to wave it. He then presented me with a Kennedy pen inscribed with the motto that would lead me for the rest of my mind-controlled existence: "Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country." Vander Jagt then escorted me back to the balcony of the legislature where my classmates were gathered. He put his arm around me in front of all my classmates and presented me with the American flag he had just had me wave for him and Ford with my rectum. My school personality split off again, but I still maintained the hope that somewhere, someday, I would find a place where people didn't. What? I could not remember what I was seeking to escape. 1. Multiple Personality Disorder, MPD, now known among mental health professionals as dissociative identity disorder, DTD, is the mind's sane defense to an insane situation. It is a way of dealing with trauma that is literally too horrible to comprehend. Incestuous rape violates primitive instinct and surpasses pain tolerance. By compartmentalizing the memory of such horrendous abuse, the rest of the mind can function normally as though nothing had happened. This compartmentalization is created by the brain actually shutting down neuron pathways to a specific part of the brain. These neuron pathways are triggered open again when the abuse recurs. The same part of the brain that is already conditioned to the trauma deals with it again and again as needed. 2. Uncle Ted had also cried hysterically the night of the murder. Several years later, he almost killed himself when he drove his car into the White River near the place of the murder. 3. Gerald Ford, also known as Leslie Lynch King, Jr., served on the Appropriations Subcommittee for the CIA and was appointed to the Warren Commission to investigate the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. While I knew him only as a pawn boss. 4. My mother often voiced complaints that she could not see faces, which personal experience has taught me indicated that she was suffering from ongoing physical and psychological traumas, and therefore was not in control of her senses. 5. Had my teachers been educated in the obvious signs of child abuse, my illusion of normalcy would have been interpreted as a cry for help. Dissociative trance daydreaming, tones of helplessness and sexuality in drawings, and the electric prod marks on my face should have been recognized. 6. These same themes were routinely used in creating Project Monarch Slaves. This fact emerged through years of networking with mental health professionals,